Okay, this is Janet Levine for the National Park Service. I'm here in Worcester, Massachusetts with Mr. Christos G. Johns, who came from what was technically just over the border in Albania, but was a Greek city, in 1933 when he was 11 years old. I would just want to say I'm very happy to be here with you. We've both been interviewed for the same article in the newspaper several years ago, and that'll also be on file at Ellis Island. Uh-huh. And why don't we start at the beginning by your saying your birth date?
I was born on November 1st in 1921.
Okay, and where?
Actually, it's northern Epiros, which is a part, which is Greek land, actually. All Greeks live there, but it's right now it's in Albania, in that section, in the southern part of Albania, bordering Greece.
Okay. And did you live in the same place up until the time?
I lived in the same town until I came to this country.
Uh-huh. Now, when you think about town, what are the things about it that you remember most?
Well, these towns are along, you see, they're in a valley, like, and most of the homes there are built along the mountainside, and they're all built with stones, I remember. And in the valley is where we used to have fields where we used to grow corn and wheat and all kinds of vegetables and things like that. That's what we used to live on, I remember. I remember many times I used to help my grandfather, because I lived most of that time with my grandfather, grandmother, and my mother. Because my father had, after he was married there and I was born, he had come to this country. And then I was raised, my first few years, I was raised mostly by my grandfather, grandmother, and mother.
What was and your grandparents' name?
My grandfather's name was Savas John. S-A-V-A-S, first name. John. Actually, the Greek name's pronounced Yanu. Ioannou, something like that. But, you know, they cut names short after we came to this country and so forth. My father had changed it to John. He came over when he was a young fella, too. He probably came through Ellis Island originally. Mm-hmm.
Your
of course,
grandmother?
My grandfather, her name was Chrysanthi. The English name would be Chrysanthi. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, that's. And her maiden name, tell you the truth, I don't remember.
Well, that's but okay. Now this was your father's.
My father's father and mother, right? Uh-huh. And in the in the villages there, because there's shortages of homes and so forth, most of this, even when they get married, they all live together in the same house. Although we had one of the larger land. Where we had practically three separate buildings in this complex where we lived in. So we were pretty well off at that time, I remember, because my father was here and he was sending money back there.
And your grandfather, was he farming?
He was mostly a farmer, that's all. There's no other activity there in these villages. All they did was farming in the valley there, grew crops and so forth. And
can you remember experiences with your grandfather?
Oh, yes, I remember. My first thing that I remember, my grandfather, I had a toothache, and he took me. And we had no cars at that time or anything, of course. We just had the donkeys or horses to get around with. I remember going, he took me to a village further up where there used to be a dentist there. And I remember he took me there to the dentist to have my toothache taken care of. Yeah, that experience, I remember that very well. And he used to take me to one of the larger villages, which is Girocastro.
And did you spell that one?
O-A-R-G-Y-R-O-K-A-S-T-R-O. That was the Greek name. But I remember now looking in the map, it's known as Girocastra, Albanian name for it. But the Greek name was Girocastro at that time. Just like how they changed names, like Constantinople at the time, now is known as Istanbul. Uh-huh. But another thing I remember on the field one time, that's an experience I'll never forget. We were harvesting at that time, and we have this, by hand we used to do it, no machinery of any kind. And we used to have these scythe-like trying to cut the wheat and so forth, staffs and all that. I remember slipping and cutting my finger, and I said, still have a little mark on this finger here from way back then. And I was, the rest of the day, I was just laying down dizzy from the, no doctor around, just wrapped it up and that's all.
What about medical attention when someone was ill in the town? What happened?
You know, we have no doctor in the town. Like I said, the nearest doctor was about, it wasn't too far, the villages were very close together, but there was one about three villages further down. And of course, our Jirokasri, which was the main, like the capital of this particular province, let's say, like this particular Northern Dnieper, which is known as. There were probably doctors there, but I remember going to any other doctor other than dentist. There is home remedies, most if anybody got sick,
Can
I remember.
Can you remember any of those?
Oh, let's see. One thing that I remember was I had some kind of something on my feet, like blotches, I remember. And I remember they're packing, they were my mother or grandfather or grandmother, I don't remember who it was, getting some kind of like grape leaves and things like that, putting them on there and wrapping them there. And in no time at all, they went away. It's funny, a lot of home remedies they used to have at that time. But other than that, I was never really sick or anybody in my family that I remember sick where they had to go to a doctor. So even the birth, it was by
midwives
used to come to the house, and we were born right in the house.
Do you remember, have you been told anything about your own birth?
No, my own birth, but I was witness to my brothers and sisters who were twins. And I remember that time because it was two separate buildings, like we had three different buildings. My grandfather and I were waiting there on one of the buildings, while the midwives, there was more than one, two or three ladies, where my grandmother and my mother's mother must have been there, and a couple other ladies helping with the birth. And here I am by the stairways on the adjoining building, I remember, when we heard the first, the sound and coming, and you know how, well, they all know what gender it is. And they say, oh, it's a boy, it's a boy. So I rushed to tell my grandfather, it was a boy. I go back again. Oh, there's another one coming along. They didn't know there was twins at that time. They didn't know, they couldn't tell. Oh, and the second one's a girl. There was twins. And those occasions I remember very well.
Now, would there be any ceremony or any kind of observance of ritual or anything like that?
Not at that time that I remember. The only other ritual that we have later on when they're baptized in church.
And what happens then?
Well, they have, the Greek Orthodox have a very very wonderful ceremony, christening ceremony, baptism ceremony. It's a special ceremony which they have these... they immerse you in the water on a big tub like, and after that, of course, they have a party, get together and celebrate the baptism.
Is the baptism done when the babies are with?
Not right now. They could be 3 months, 2 months, 6 months. It depends on the individual how well off the baby in good health and so forth and so on. But even now, they don't have it immediately. They could wait 2-3 months at least.
And how about name days?
Instead of celebrating birthdays, they have name days.
Okay, wait, we're going to pause here. Okay, we're going to stop this interview now, and we're going to interview James John, who's here and is more pressed for time. And then we'll resume this interview after that. Okay, we're resuming now as I said earlier. I'm talking now again with Christos G. Johns, who is the older brother of James John, who I just interviewed in the break in this tape. Okay, let's see now. We were talking about name days?
Yes, at that time we broke off, you were asking about it. You asked me, I think, a question about what we celebrate, the birthdays or something. Instead of celebrating birthdays, we celebrate name days. Ordinarily, when we're baptized in the Greek Orthodox Church, ordinarily we... get a name, we're given a name of a saint, ordinarily, although not 100%, but in most cases, most of us receive a named after a particular saint, which is quite a few of them. And being my name being Christos, if you remember what this Jesus Christ's name, right? Jesus Christ. Christos is from Christ. And my name day is Christmas Day. And that's the day that every year, and for all these past years, now it's getting older and we have children and so forth, of course, but I remember until about 3 years ago, I'd have the whole family up on Christmas Day at my house because we celebrated with the only one named Chris, Christos, because the Greek name for Christ is Christos. Mm-hmm. And all my family get together, usually as many as, we have a large family now. Never had less than 35, 40 people. All family members get together and celebrate Christmas at my house. But now everybody, my brothers and sisters, they have children, they're married, and they're grown now. We could probably get over 50 together, and it's hard to get together. Now everybody has their own family they go to, but we celebrate name days more than anything else.
Well, a particular name, if you have the name day of a particular saint, or in your case, uh-huh. of Christ, is there some particular link or a bond that is between that saint and the person who's...
Not necessarily. That's another thing how we receive the names. Not as much these days. Now things have changed. But I remember in the olden days, way back in when I was born, let's say even a few years later, we have what they call a godfather, which we call cumbaro. Even the parents don't know what the name is going to be. It's up to the cumbaro to choose the name. But now, of course, the parents recommend to the cumbaro to what name to give him. But before, they were just given those names, but they thought they were a particular favorite saint or something they'd done, but not necessarily any particular link to it. They're just like James, John, Paul, St. Paul, all those saints, names and others since that.
The parents choose the gumbado?
Yes, usually, sometimes it's a relative, sometimes a very close friend, or a gumbado will come up, somebody that, a close friend of yours, they say, I want to baptize your child. Usually they say, oh, fine, I'd be very happy to have you as my, cumbado. They call it cumbado in Greek, but it's like the godfather. And they usually link together. The cumbado is responsible for raising this child through, make sure the church, baptized and so forth, through make sure that the child that is baptized is brought up properly in the church.
Is there a lot of contact between the?
Usually there are. Well, every year, even during, not necessarily the Bedouin name days, the Kumbara is the first one. Also, they come to this name day celebration because they named them always on their birthdays, also more in this country than in the old country. The Kumbara usually give them a gift or something, and especially at the Christmas time, there's gifts given by the Kumbara to their godchild. They're very close link to the ground. Uh-huh.
How about other rituals, maybe around weddings or deaths or anything that you remember from the old country?
In the old country, I remember, deaths not so much, although I remember going to a couple of funerals. I remember especially one who we kumbari with my grandfather in the old country. Was a very popular man. He was involved with church, with the church a lot, and he was always present in the community for many years, of the church community and all that. And one of his godchild, had left the country. Let's say, I think he maybe not in this country, but he might have been. A lot of the ones that left those years, a lot of them they couldn't get into the United States. They either went to Australia, a lot of them, or not so much in Australia, but in Argentina and South America, in Buenos Aires. And I remember one coming back from Buenos Aires into our village there, and he passed away. I guess he must have been sick, but he came back there. And I remember that funeral, and I remember going to it. I forget how old I'm back, probably wasn't much older than 7, 8 years old. We, of course, they go to the wake. They don't have any, like we have here, funeral homes over there. They have the wakes at the house and so forth. And I remember going to the wake, this particular, because they were close friends of ours. And like I said, my grandfather's godchild. And I remember being there. And I remember that, but that's the only funeral that I remember. I remember them carrying him through the village up to the there's another chapel, like St. Nicholas, at the top of the hill on the village there, where there's the grounds, the burial grounds, and they bury him there. That's the only funeral that I, but that's a sad affair. They get together afterwards, and they, it's a sad affair. That's it's the only one that I remember. I remember funeral weddings, though, of course, much happier times. Mm-hmm. The wedding that I remember very particularly, I couldn't have been very, there again, it could have been anywhere between 6 and 10 years old. Maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years old at that time. My cousin, girl cousin, with that time, she was about she could have probably about 12 years older than I am. So I must have been 5 years old at that time when she got married. And the ceremony was at house, because she stayed with us in this complex that we had, three separate buildings. And I remember, of course, the church wedding ceremony and so forth. The same, that hasn't changed one bit up to this date. The wedding ceremony is identical like it was in the olden days. And after that, I remember they come into the house there and celebrating. I remember dancing. We had a band there, because between the two houses we had a big patio, a courtyard like that, and they were dancing around. And I was on the porch of one of the buildings watching down while they were dancing and all that. And I remember that distinctly. And of course, on the courtyard there, we had this fig tree and this. And the fig trees are very popular at this part of the country there. And the figs were really big, big figs. Not the little figs that you're talking about. It's big like plums, and the big plums are the size of oranges, some of them.
Were there any particular dishes that your grandmother or mother made out of those figs?
No, we just used to eat them like fruit. Fruit, that's all, because the cooking facilities, they weren't that great at that time. We just used to have this particular one section of the house, used to be like a kitchen, you call it now, but it's mostly, the floor was made out of like, not asbestos, but what you call mud, like, I don't know the material they used. But it wasn't wood because of the fire, because we had fireplaces to keep warm whenever, although there wasn't we don't have very cold winters there in that part of the country. I don't think it got done. I remember any snow at all to begin with, hardly any snow. But it used to get chilly at times. But we'd have built a fire, like a fireplace in the nighttime especially. We'd get there around the fireplace, and that's why we'd eat on the, and we had no big tables to eat on this. We'd just sit around the fireplace on the floor, and they would serve these dishes, different kinds of, whatever they had, different kind of, very little meat to begin with. We had no refrigeration at that time, in those years when I was there in the in the 20s and the early part of 30. No electricity, no refrigeration. So you couldn't have the meat that you'd have. It's when you slaughter a pig or a lamb, and you'd have to eat it within a day or two, practically. Yeah. It's the only time you'd have some celebration on a day. Then you'd slaughter an animal and have a big time, good time. But mostly it was cheeses, a lot of, because we had goats and sheep and cows there, and the milk, even the sheep were milked at that time. We used to make cheese out of that, and the goats and the sheep, we used to make this cheese, and I remember my grandfather making some of that. It's a funny thing, we used to put it in sacks then and hang it on the trees to do. It's an amazing formula how they make it, even though they had no equipment of any kind, but they still knew how to do things. And
Can you remember, sort of in detail, the process of making that cheese?
All I remember is, of course, after they get the milk and so forth, about how they used to have some kind of handmade
So pound it down?
Yeah, something like that. And then they used to put it in sacks. And I remember one time they used to hang these sacks from the trees and they dripped down. And that thing that used to formulate this cheese, a block of cheese. And we used to have a lot of that. I used to love it, especially when it was nice and fresh. It wasn't really hard, and it was just fresh at that time. I remember those things happening.
And what about bread?
Bread, we used to make cornbread, a lot of corn, because we had corn. We used to harvest the corn, especially those years I remember. They used to have one big warehouse, well, a little bigger than this. A room here, of course, it's hard to tell in how big it is, but twice the size of this anyway. And everybody after the harvest used to take part of that harvest into this building and use it. You know, this is during the summer months when after the harvest and the fall, whatever it is. So during the winter months, they'd have all this stored away in this particular place for the whole village there. The village might have about 100 families. That's all. It isn't that big a village we're talking about. For everybody, so you're talking about if it's 100 families, a lot. I don't think we even had 100 families, maybe. Anyway, the average, some villages could have about 50, 60 homes. Maybe we had about one of the larger villages, maybe 70, 80.
Would there be stores? Would there be little shops?
There's no, shops. No shops to actually purchase anything in the villages. Now, in down the valley where it's in, I said mountainside, okay, where the houses, if you can picture it, were built on the mountainside. This is a valley, and the other side is another mountain. So we're in between two mountains into a valley. In the valley, there's a road that continues from, let's say, Arjur Orchestra that I mentioned before, the main city, or city, which may have a, and city, what we're talking about, city, if they had 1,000 or 5,000 people, that's a lot. And it continued all during that area there from one end to all the way down to the Adriatic Sea, practically, Aia Saranto. There's another town between Aia Saranto and Arjur Orchestra. There's a lot of villages. Could be as many as 12, 15 villages in between there. And there's one road that connects all these there down at the, going through the valley. And in certain towns, not in my town, there's the town after mine and before mine, two other towns after mine, which are close together. You go walking in 10 minutes, mm-hmm. both of them. They're so close together, some of them. That have some stores by the roadside.
That would sell what? That
would sell, well, there was a member that have, one I remember, a mill. There was a mill there where we used to take the wheat, for instance. And make flour out of it. I remember going with my grandfather and taking these sacks of wheat there and grind it into flour. Then we take the flour. That's how we bake the bread and so forth. Make the bread.
Would the bread be made in individual homes?
No. Yeah. Each person makes a, each individual home makes their own bread. They cook their own food. No restaurants to eat out. unless you go to the city. That's right. That's one of the reasons why they got into this restaurant business here in this country.
Shops besides the.
They have business. Where you can buy the necessities, like where you could buy sugar, coffee, olives, let's say, or other things like that. Basic products, that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to produce in your own home.
I see.
But then you'd have to have money to buy that. That's why a lot of them used to live these villages and go come to this country, wherever they went to, because they've heard stories about that you can make money in this country, especially. They thought that the gold in the streets and so forth. And my father left as a young boy before he got married. He left the village with his older brother. It's funny, so his older brother didn't come through Ellis Island illegitimately. He had come through the southern part of the United States through, I don't know if it was through Mexico or whatever, it's illegal alien, but he came legal afterwards. But my older uncle, who lived here in the city also, mm-hmm. and he lived to about 90-something years old, he passed away. He was an illegal alien for a long time, and he was afraid at that time, naturally, but eventually he became a legal resident. Now we were talking about the restaurant business and so on. My father left as a young fellow. He came to this country legally through Ellis Island when he was probably in his teenager. World War I in Europe was earlier than 12, and then this country didn't enter in, 1917. Right. So in between there, he had come to this country, and he was by this time. So he was in this country probably during World War I. Mm-hmm.
What was he doing here?
He had come here, and originally, what he did as a teenager, I have no idea. But I remember a lot of them used to get that others that had left the same village or a nearby village, they used to knew each other. They used to live in, work in factories or in some other restaurant already started here. But I remember a lot of them were in Fitchburg. They had some kind of a factory in Fitchburg that they used to work at there. And apparently, my father must have gone back in about 1920, at the end of 1920. And they got married, and I was born in 1921. Then after I was born, apparently he came back to this country. Mm-hmm. And he didn't go back again until about 4 or 5 years later. And that's when my brother and sister were born.
I see. Well, now, when he left, after you were born, your mother didn't live with his parents.
Oh, yeah. She lived with my grandfather and grandmother, my father's parents.
Right. That was usual.
That's the usual procedure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because we lived a stone's throw away, and my other grandparents lived just a couple of houses further up the hill a little bit. And I remember that. I used to go there all the time.
What do you remember about that set of... First of all, what was your mother's name and maiden name?
Maiden name was Rogo. Right now it's probably in English just turned to Rogos, R-O-G-O-S. Although we found out her brothers who had gone, they didn't come to this country, they had gone down to Buenos Aires, her two brothers, mm-hmm. They were living in Buenos Aires. Their name was spelled over there Rongo, R-O-N-G-O. I used to know it as R-O-G-O-S. They hadn't wrong. So it's how they spell it. Who knows what they were. French, Spanish language down there, English here.
Did that branch of the family stay in South America?
Yeah, they never were able to come here, although my mother and father went down to visit them down in Buenos Aires. Mm-hmm. See, my father, of course, came to this country and became a citizen in the 20s, apparently, in the late 20s. So after he was well established here, after my brother and sister were born, came back the third time and brought us over. He had become a citizen at that time. So,
what do you remember about experiences with your mother's mother?
I remember her mother very well. Her father, slightly. And I remember a younger brother she had. She had about three brothers at least, and they all had left. But I remember going to their house a lot and playing with my cousins there. One of her brothers, who was in the same category, they had gone to another country and went back and so forth. And I remember playing with my two cousins more than I remember playing with my brother and sister. It's unusual.
They may have been closer in age to you.
That's right, they were. Because I remember going, and I remember her brother coming over and took his wife and the two children, brother and sister, and they left before we left in 1933, but they had gone to Buenos Aires. And I remember the house there. They also had a complex, about two different separate buildings for homes there.
What did that grandfather do? Do you remember?
Well, I really don't remember. But most of them were either, like I said, my grandfather, I had some sheep at that time. He was raising that. He was doing that. It's unusual, and I don't remember the other thing my grandfather used to have near the church, there was a complex, there was a church, a school, and they had like a coffee house next to it. I remember my grandfather running that coffee house. And on Sundays, I remember after church, there used to be a lot of vegetable and fruit peddlers. They used to congregate at this particular area there, and they would sell their products to the people of the village after church. I remember going through there trying to pick up. My grandmother says, go ahead and pick out that. I remember I used to like cucumbers. And I hear them, they're all lined up there. They just sit there and waiting for somebody to come and buy. They don't want to, they don't know how to speak out and compete. And they go in there and select the best one. I remember going to pick one up and paying for it. And there was, but there was a coffee house like this to get together, people from the village there. And school was, there was a hall there, and upstairs from the hall was the school, a small school, two rooms. And they used to combine grades together, but I was there till about what? I was 11 years old, so I was in school for about 5 years at least. But it's a funny thing. Third grade, fourth grade, and so forth, regular Greek school, like I said. Learn how to speak Greek, learn how to write, and different things. Then in 1931, the Albanian government, for some reason, they were really restricting that particular area. The Greeks, they took away their freedom practically. They closed the Greek schools. They even attempted to close the churches. And they brought over an Albanian teacher to teach us Albanian. And I remember my last year and a half, until I left in 1932 and part of 1933 until I left there, I was going to an Albanian, and I was no Greek at all, Albanian language, and the only one who could talk Albanian Greek at all. And
was there conflict between the Albanians and the Greeks?
Well, at that time, for some reason, the Greek, I don't know, there was a king at that time, and we never had that real conflict, but I said, just for some reason, I don't know what happened, but they were trying to restrict it, They even had us, they trying to get a portion of the products that they were producing as part of to donate to the, which became communist country at that time, after that became communist.
Were there, what was the proportion, do you have any sense of that, what portion of the village was Albanian and what portion?
No, all Greek. All those towns, all Greek, 100%.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew how to speak Albanian until they started teaching in the school those particular years. Then, of course, a lot of Greeks, rose up, uprising and so forth. And says, it's not right and so forth. They used to have the policemen used to come to the villages and... Oh, I remember an incident when I was a young boy, and that was scary. There was the scary incident. There was some kind of a celebration in the town. It could have been a name day, whatever it was. Maybe it was the church's name day, let's say, because every church is named after some saint, like Saint Spirit. And I think our church over there was Saint Demetrius, I'm not sure. I think it was St. Demetrius, which is James. And we were celebrating. And then we were dancing in this hallway. We're talking about the schools upstairs, this floor. We used to get together. If the weather wasn't good, we'd be inside. Otherwise, we'd be out in the church grounds there dancing and all the celebrating on those big holidays. A lot of dancing. And used to have bands that used to come with a three or four piece. Bands playing Greek music.
What would be the bands? What kind of instruments?
Well, they have the bouzouki, the violin, the guitar, and the clarinet, which is a popular instrument in the out part of the country, clarinet is a top instrument, and the violin, naturally. Okay, violin and clarinet. But in the southern part of Greece, the bouzouki and, you know, the whatever they call those mandolins. And but what happened was there was a policeman coming, which was in the other town over from our village. There was like a police station there. And a policeman had come, was walking, no, like I said, well, he walked. He was coming through narrow paths. And somebody threw some stones at him. And he came to the celebration where we had, and he wanted all the children gathered together to find out who was that threw the stones at him. And I was one of them. I didn't know. There was about five or six of us lined up there and there, and he was saying he wanted to find, questioning us, you know, threatening, and here we were all scared. We didn't know. No, and I said, I don't know. They thought, and my grandfather, remember, got so upset at him, and he went up there and he told him, leave the children alone. I remember that. They had nothing to do with it. This opportunity, whoever it was, is probably not here. And I remember that part, and that's about it. But it turned out all right, because the policeman backed up afterwards, trying to find out who it was and so forth.
That's interesting. Do you remember anything else about the policeman of
Other than that particular incident, nothing. But there's no other policeman in the town.
Just one man.
No, nobody from our town. It just happened in the police station at one of the on the roadside that have a station of some kind there. Just you know, whatever they used to. But we never had any other policemen. Other than the time, this happened to be about the time when the Albanians started to take over. You know. And I remember that time they made us the children. Well, I was about 9, 10 years old at that time when this started. They had a special uniform. Us used to dress us in this colors of the Albanian, which was black and red, something like that. And uniform. They used to go down by this police station over there, the ground there, and used to parade us around. From that age, they used to have us turn into soldiers, trying to turn us from into, you know. And that I remember.
How about clothing in general? Where did you get your shoes and
it's a funny thing about that you mentioned shoes, especially. Recently, because I have a grandson that lives in Hampton in New Hampshire, who knew about my story coming through Ellis Island because he had read about an article that we had a meeting here in Worcester, and I had my picture in the paper and my story about coming to Ellis Island. And he knew about it, so they had a project in Hampton Academy about Ellis Island. So the teacher, they asked me if I would be willing to go up there and give speak about my experiences at Ellis Island. And I did. And during the question and answer period after my short speech there about my experiences, one little boy got up and he says, "Did you have shoes when you were a young boy?" And you know, I told him when I came over from Albania there, from that section of Albania, which is like we said, we're all Greeks there. And I says, "Well, now that you asked me that question, I don't remember having really any shoes at all when I was growing up there. Because the weather was warm there, we hardly wore shoes. But I remember," I says to him one time, "that we, part of the school, when we was in school there, once in a while we'd go down to the valley there at a playground and play soccer ball." And I remember telling him, marching down the stones and so forth down to the playground, I had a pair of boots bigger than my size, actually. But I was so proud. I was one of the few that had some kind of shoes on. But
the adults had
shoes, but I don't remember too well, of course. But they used to have some kind of like sandals, like, and but not fancy shoes like we have now that we know of. Like I say, it was a very poor area down there. They had most of them, I would say, other than somebody that they had relatives in whether it was in Greece or it was in Italy or they were in the United States, that had gone somewhere where there's work, they worked, and they'd send some money to their relatives back home, and from that they could purchase whatever they could afford. But there's no doubt there were shoes, some type of shoes, but I remember exactly what type they were at that time. But I remember most of the time I was barefooted.
Were there shoemakers or tailors that made things for people?
As far as clothing is concerned, most of the clothing and so forth, they'd buy material, I remember, and the wives, the women, my mother or my grandmothers, they'd make their own clothes, practically a lot of them, that I remember. Most of the clothing was homemade. You just have a pair of trousers and some kind of a shirt or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. But we didn't need much more than that. At the time, like I say, most of the time, 10 months out of the year, were probably warm weather, over 70, 60, 70 degrees and so forth.
How about food? Do you remember any things that your mother or grandmothers made that you liked to eat when you were there?
Food, like I said, during the summer months, which was tough on, especially with we'd like anything we could get a hold of for as far as food. But I remember one dish, and you'd be surprised that this actually is it's amazing that I think of it now, why I used to like it and eat it. There'd be vinegar, sugar, and bread, and mix it up in there, and I used to love it.
Cornbread,
mostly cornbread. Wheat bread was like having cake. Corn was plentiful at that area. Wheat, also wheat, but not as much. I don't know whether it was harder to raise wheat than corn or what it was, I don't know. But cornbread was the staple bread that they used to, all homemade. And if we used to buy the wheat bread, I remember it used to be like unusual. There was the good part, like the cake, having cake. And they would sell some wheat bread in these mills down there. I mentioned down at a couple of villages by the roadside that have the store that you sell wheat bread and things like that. But then they'd have that from cornmeal and things like that. We used to be a favorite in the winter months, especially a staple product that used to keep you nice and warm, cornmeal. And chickens, we had just have a lot of chickens, chicken soup, and once in a while we'd have a chicken for a meal. So, and whenever, like I say, we slaughter some kind of an animal for some reason, big holidays, we'd have meat, but it's about the only time for meat. Plenty of milk, we used to have milk from cows, we used to have cows and goats, and other than that, for food, of course, plenty of fruit and vegetables. We used to have vegetable gardens. We used to raise our own vegetables. Right. Fruits, we used to have grapes, plenty of grapes, the figs, as far as our village was concerned. We used to have a lot of nut trees, some kind of nuts that we used to like to climb and knock down as young kids and eat it. Other fruits, they used to have, like the fruit peddlers used to come and sell that. They used to go through with their donkeys loaded on each side, where there was. It's the type of mostly was oranges, of course. I don't remember apples too much, but oranges. Grapes, of course, plums. Different kinds of fruits that used to come in. We'd barter, used to do mostly bartering too. Oh. We'd give eggs and they'd give us something else because we used to have chickens and a lot of eggs. So instead of exchanging money, if some people that have these fruits and they wanted eggs, it would change like that. Exchange products. So where someone had plenty of this, they didn't have any of that, so they used to barter. There was one, instead of money, they used to use that, a lot of them, the people there. It's a funny thing. We used to have a lot of droughts there, talking about eggs now. And I remember as a young boy, we used to go around to the different homes at places that more well-to-do homes, that have plenty of eggs, let's say, or something. And we used to, pray for the rain. And we used to go as young children, go around the house and say, like we'd say, for the rain, hoping that the rain, we used to have some kind of a jingle we used to sing for the rain, like you say, rain, rain, go away, come back another day. But we used to have some for the rain to come as soon as possible and all that. And they give us an egg for our trouble. It's unusual things that we used to do those days.
Do you remember any other either games or stories you were told as a little boy?
I remember the stories that my grandfather used to tell me a lot of stories. Games, we didn't have too many games. Oh, the games we used to play, it's a funny thing. We never didn't have the things that they have here, here in this country. But we'd play with whatever we can get a hold of naturally. I mean, nothing that was hand-built especially for the game other than the ball, let's say the soccer ball. I remember playing in the small playgrounds in the village. In the center of the villages would have a little area where the children would go. And we used to play, like for baseball, we used to get a stick, just some kind of a stick. And we'd have other sticks, shorter stick and a big stick. We used to set it up on the thing there and hit it down and go up in the air, and we try to hit it as far as possible. And then somebody else would chase it. And then you run around like in baseball, but with sticks instead of baseball and bats and things like that. But we used to make our own whatever we can. And then one time that I got hurt as a young boy, I remember, and rushing up to my house crying, we'd play with stones. We'd have some kind of a round, like a stone, and another big one there. And we'd throw the stone, trying to knock the other one down. And, you know, who said we can do them? But somehow one boy threw a stone and hit me on the head. And I ran home crying. I remember that. And, of course, when I was in school, we used to take hikes up further up in the mountain into the... And one time we had gone up, and we used to go to the very, very top of the mountain. And from there we could see apparently the part of the Adriatic Sea, because we were near there. And coming down the hill, I remember, as young kids, you know, you run, you try to outrun the other, whoever gets down there first, but it's steep hills there. I remember falling, tumbling over, and I got a big gash on my knee, which, Mark, I still have here. Because there's no doctor to sew it and up and so forth, all of this, try to do it together, but it's still... The mark, I you should see it here, you know, my knee is still there. And I remember that part, but everything turned out all right.
How about the stories your grandfather told you?
Oh, one story that I remember, and I read more about it when I came to this country, which also is known in this country, about the Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. That's one of the first stories that I remember. Yeah. It was told a little differently at that time.
Can you remember what it was?
Well, I really... I don't know, but I remember that distinctly reading the story. And then when I reread in this country, it all came back to me about that story that my grandfather used to tell me. It was a little different, but I got the gist of which was about the same thing. So that's about the only really story that I remember as far as fairy tales and things like that. But
How about little songs? Do you remember any of those little rhymes or little songs?
No, we never had nursery rhymes that I know. Oh, yeah, well, yes, there's some that I still remember.
Can you say them?
Well, that's in Greek. I don't know if I can translate it or not. Let's see, one of the, sometimes I when I think of it, I tell it to my grandchildren in Greek. I sing it to them,
trying to sing.
But
in Greek, and then you can maybe just say what it means.
The one, there's a two or three there. One has to do with the church, I think, about let me see which one. Okay, I'm trying to remember. Okay. Well, one we used to rock a little baby to sleep or something. Like I have a 2.5-year-old grandson, but I used to always sing that. I'd say, Nani, Nani, to pedi, oso na po kimithi. Also, Nathi Manatu, Natu Feri Pendavra, Pendavra Pendepulia, Kemia Closo Closaria, Kenan Goku Tongutsone. Now, to translate that, I remember the words even though I don't speak Greek fluently. It means that they say rockabye, little baby, until you fall asleep, until your mother comes, and she's going to bring you five eggs, and five eggs will be hatched into five little chicks, and they bring you a chicken and a rooster, and all that. It rhymes together in Greek so well. Uh-huh. That it's like a sing-along, but I remember that very well, and I still remember it to this day. It used to be sung to me, you know, back home when I was a little boy. And there's a couple others, but I don't remember the words exactly. But other things that about silly things in English, but they rhyme in Greek so well. You know how you mix words, yes, that the meaning sometimes loses. Right. But another one I used to be told that. Once upon a time, there was this tomcat tried to dance. He couldn't dance very well, and they cut off his tail, things like that. Uh-huh. But they rhyme in sing-song in the Greek language, and I remember those things.
So do you remember when your father returned to take you to the United States?
Okay, he came after he had become a citizen of the United States in 1932, he came over again to Albania, and this last time he came, he went over, and then the last time, then we never went back again to Albania, by the way. He came over there and he told us that he was going to bring us back here to this country. I remember taking a trip with him and my mother, not my brother and sister, just my father, my mother, and myself. We went to the capital of Albania, Tirana, to get the proper passports for us and the paperwork. I remember going that trip in Tirana. Oh, it was...
What struck you about going
to Tirana? Well, first time I ever went out of that area. And at that time, of course, we had this particular like a taxi. It was like a station wagon. Took my mother, my father, myself. We went along, but the road was atrocious, mountainous. We had to go through mountains and all that because we were in this valley. To go northern part of Albania, we had traveled through a lot of mountains, mountain passes. And on the way, we had an accident, lost a tire, and we couldn't quite fix it. Another truck came by, fortunately. We transferred all of our other stuff into the truck, and we finally got to Tirana. First time I saw the big city. And there again, there was hardly any, too many automobiles, mostly bicycles. And they had horse-grown carriages enclosed, like, you know, they used to... You get into them, they track you from one place to another. And my first hotel, we went to the hotel, a small hotel there. We stayed there, over there for 2-3 days, I think, until we got all the paperwork straightened out. First time I ever, like, they'd have a restaurant there, okay? It was the first time I ever ate. I don't remember what I ate, but it was good, whatever it was. I mean, something like, you know, fantastic to me. Everything was... like in being in Disneyland, for instance, Fantasyland. And I remember this distinctly. They were interviewing us. They were interviewing my mother and my father. And they took me separate. Another fellow took me separately and was asking me questions in Albania, in Albanian language. And I had learned a little bit because I'd gone to Albanian school. I remember hearing my mother tell my father, hey, what's he doing to Chris there? My father said, don't worry, he'll take care of himself. He's doing all right. So I was, you know, was asking him my name, when how old I was, you know, so forth and so on. So I was giving him all this information in Albanian, which I had learned. So that helped out quite a bit. And then we went back, and then after that, we had to take after everything was all set, we took and I remember the last day we left there, I remember very well. It's funny how that sticks in my mind now. My mother, my grandmother especially, crying, seeing us leave, you know, and we grew up there, you know, all of us there, and they were being left alone. The others already left, my other uncle already left, and my aunt had gone to her own side of the family, she had her own house, so they were left alone, all these now three separate buildings, just the two of them. And I remember crying, you know, my grandfather too, of course. He doesn't show as much. Natural man doesn't show his emotions. But then we left, we, you know, farewells and so forth.
Do you remember anything your mother brought or packed?
Oh, I can tell you a story. You think it's unusual, which is stupid in a way. But okay, it had to be, okay, when we left, it had to be after Easter. We have Easter eggs in the Greek Orthodox religion. You know, we dye the eggs. Well, they have it in this country. Well, we have Easter eggs. Everybody exchanges, and they break each other's egg, you know, and so forth. And they thought of something, you know, fantastic, or Easter eggs. They're blessed in church and so forth. And she had packed some Easter eggs in her big trunk that we had to bring to this country. Besides that, she had her... her wedding, what's not a gown? See, what they used to wear, it's a funny, they used to have a different kind of wedding. It's not a dress, it was all kinds, like a vest with a lot of ornaments in the beginning, and they had this fancy, that no hats that you think of at this time. I wish I had a picture of it. There was a picture that was taken of her, my father, and myself before the twins were born. Apparently the time when he came over before the twins were born. It was the Easter time at that time, too. And he had brought me a suit, we're talking about clothes. He had brought over a suit for me to wear and a pair of shoes. And I was talking to my mother just the other day. I've seen that picture. I says, do you know where that picture is? I don't remember. She says, who knows? I don't know if maybe my daughter has it, because when we cleaned out her apartment, a lot of the things were stored at my daughter's house. And I remember that picture. I'd like to have seen it to show it to you. Talking about, and I hated to wear that suit because he wanted a picture taken. You know, I had a photographer coming, and I was obstinate. I wouldn't even put my suit on. Finally, they had me dressed up on that, I remember, and the shoes and everything. And they took a picture. You should have seen my face, a sourpuss at the time. I wasn't happy that I was dressed up like that, like a monkey, I figured at the time. Never used to wearing clothes like that before. And she had packed that the same, she had on her wedding outfit on. It wasn't just one dress, it was all kinds of parts, like from here on it's a different kind of color thing, and like I say, like a vest, like with ornaments, and a hat that was especially, not a hat, but something's made out of turban-like that they wear. It's they wrap up as a cover and all that. And She had brought that up. Yeah, those are actually, we wear a lot of these when we have here at the church, when we have an affair, especially the Epirotic with Northern Epirus. Epirus, we call Epiroti, that's because we're Northern Epirus. We have special uniforms that wear on occasions, whether like weddings or at festivals and so forth. So those uniforms, the only time they're like a uniform, actually. Mm-hmm. And they wear them here still to this day. A lot of them wear, they have these. As a matter of fact, we have these Viva dancers here in Worcester, and they wear these uniforms. The women got together here and made these uniforms from the way they were made in the old country those days. And they still wear them when they do that fancy dancing and so forth, these Greek dancers with those uniforms on. She brought that over. But going about the eggs now, when we arrived at the United States, naturally they go through your trunks. And I remember this when they were going through the customs there. Apparently, my brother and sister were already taken to the hospital in Ellis Island. The Conde de Savoia must have docked in New York at the where they docked the passenger liners. And the trunks were taken out and so forth. And the customs saw these eggs, he says, what are these? Boom, he takes them out of there, throw them out. Goes, well, you can't bring anything like that from them because they're probably rotten by that time anyway. But we figure that these eggs, because they're dyed and so forth, they last a lot longer than regular eggs without being refrigerated. Don't forget now, seven days in a boat. These eggs must have, who knows what, you know. Throw them out, they wouldn't allow them in, of course. I remember those. That now that reminds me why it had to be Easter time, sometimes in April, at the end of April when we came here. Of course, the Easter time dates change from year to year. There's not a set date.
Did Do you remember leaving and going for the boat to take to the United States?
Okay, from, like I say, from Albania, we took that short ride into Italy across the Adriatic Sea, where it was very turbulent, and the first time we ever got seasick was on that boat. And then from the eastern part of Italy, we took a sort of a train into onto the western part, where we docked at the near Naples there somewhere, I think this. And we boarded the boat, the Conte di Savoia, and that's where they discovered that my brother and sister were coming down with the measles, and they were taken directly to the hospital ward of the boat, because I had no indication of measles. I had no. I must have had them earlier, so couldn't catch them again. And we boarded the boat there, and on our way to the United States. I think it took about 7 days or so across the Mediterranean, Atlantic Ocean, into New York. And my brother and sister, being coming down now with the measles showing pretty well, they were taken directly to a hospital in Ellis Island. And I didn't find out until recently exactly where it was located, because I paid a visit to Ellis Island recently, and I asked specifically where were the hospitals here that they used to take people that were, supposed to be hospitalized, and he pointed it out to them. I said, oh, no wonder I never saw them while they were there. They were in a different part of the section entirely. And I went to Ellis Island. The first thing that struck me, of course, I wasn't taken by, like my brother and sister did, under supervision to the hospital. We walked in. I remember this big building, looking at it, amazing at it, the big dome-like, and going inside there. And there was a floor on the first floor there, and I remember spiral stairways at that time.